Hey guys, welcome to another edition of Stock Talk. It's Trevor Kirkpatrick and Corey Edge, as always, here to bring you another episode of Stock Talk. Today, I'm pretty excited to bring in our guest and veterinarian, Todd Price. We had a conversation about many things, one of which was African swine fever, which you guys will hear much more about. I've been hearing a bunch of stir and rumors, so I was like, you know what? We just need to get a vet on here, set the record straight, and do what we need to do. So, but before we get into that, we've got some awesome news to bring up and some awesome people we've been working with, especially our folks there at Walton Webcasting. I actually just got off the phone with them, Corey.
And yeah, we did.
Yeah, so they're awesome to talk with. So, hey, some exciting news on their end. They are going to be at the Central Indiana Classic this weekend on May 4th. And then that next day, they'll be at the Purdue Block and Bridle there in Tipton, Indiana.
May the 4th be with you.
Yeah. Oh, that's Cinco de Mayo. They're going to have a heck of a show there at the Purdue Block and Bridle.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you get Star Wars and Mardi Gras combined in one.
But
that's a weird crowd.
Oh, my gosh. But hey, them guys are going to give you another live feed of that show. I tuned in last week and saw the other Indiana circuit show there. So, as always, giving you the content that they want. And like we've been saying many, many times before, if you haven't tuned in to watch some of their Stock Center news and some of the other content that they have, I don't know what rock you're living under. You need to get out of and start looking at some of their stuff. So exciting news on their end. And we're going to work extremely well together out at World Pork Expo, which I guess now is called the Exposition. So exciting stuff on that end.
Very exciting stuff on that end. And speaking of the Exposition, and another exciting announcement is Trevor and I have been fortunate to work with some pretty awesome people here as we've kicked this thing off and really got it moving. And one of those groups happens to be Fierce Threads.
Oh, yeah.
And those guys, I tell you what, we got our club lamb hats done by them, Edge Club Lambs, and just incredible work. I mean, the stitching quality is awesome. They're easy to work with. They've got people all over, people that you probably even recognize the names on a few of them. So, you know, that's what's really cool. And so what's cool about Fierce Threads and what they're going to do at the Exposition is they will deliver, a free shipping to expo orders, and those have to be in by May 13th. So if you want to order apparel for your program and want to pick it up, free delivery there to the expo, you got to have those orders in by May 13th. So remember that. And they'll bring those products with them, so you guys can pick them up whenever you want. Another big cool thing that they're doing is that they are going to be the only exclusive provider of the Exposition gear. And so they'll be the only people that'll be selling those. So, kind of a once in a lifetime deal. If this, obviously this African swine fever, if it goes away and we don't have to worry about it, year after year, the Exposition, will have only happened once. And so get those cool apparel items that they'll be offering for sale as well, along with the NJSA, new NJSA gear. And a couple new things that they'll be launching at the Epic Exposition that they're excited about. I don't know if they're going to disclose those to us or not. So maybe, just have to go and stop by the Fierce Threads booth and check them out. But yeah, just awesome to work with. We'll have, all of our apparel that we will do, is through Fierce Threads. And so if you want to get a hold of those guys, over there to place some orders here right before Expo, get a hold of Mark Standley. And I'll give you his phone number, so get your pen and paper ready. It's 806-683-4874. Or Jenna, his wife, you can call her at 806-683-1604. Or just call their office at 806-455-1453. Now, I don't know how good I did there, Trev, on my radio announcer voice, but I really tried.
No, hey, it was all good. I got the message. And that, like you said about their stitching is superb. When I got stuff done before with other companies, and I'm already seeing my hats kind of fraying and the stitching's kind of coming undone and discolored, I've had all of my Kirkpatrick Family Show Pig stuff done with them as well. Really, really, really good quality. They're I put my hats through the ringer and kind of go to every show with them and rough them up, but you can't hardly tell on the hats that they did. So make sure you get all of your stuff done like we are at Stock Talk. All of our merchandise is through them and will be available to you guys to purchase coming extremely soon. Speaking of merchandise, old buddy, our t-shirt designs were pretty awesome. And we do have a winner that we're going to announce.
We do have a winner. Yep.
And it's pretty awesome and come from a previous guest, matter of fact.
Oh, yes, it did. And they even drew it up and sketched it to us. I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking maybe we should post their sketch and what our graphic designer, Miss Maddie Maid, came up with.
Yes. Yep.
That, side by side.
That would be awesome cool. Because that will prove how she can bring things to life. So my sister there, Taylor Kirkpatrick, shout out to her and her company, Maddie Maid, doing some awesome things there on the graphic design side. So we will launch that winner tonight. We can't do it on a podcast because you can't see the freaking design. So we're going to wait and do that later tonight. We're going to launch it on social media. So make sure you stay tuned and tonight jump on social media. As always, once you like and follow our social media platforms, stay connected and watch to see who wins our t-shirt design, because I guarantee you're going to want to buy that t-shirt. And if you're not, if you are at the exposition like we're going to be, you can order it online in our on our platforms that we're going to launch very, very soon. So excited as hell about all of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, a little teaser too. We're not going to announce it on this show, so you have to tune in next week to find out. But there's something that we're going to do at the exposition where you might even have a chance to win a free shirt with their our audience submitted logo on it. So you might want to tune in next week. I'm really a big fan of this new audio soundboard you got going on.
If I don't overuse it, I've got so many. Like I just downloaded two more, and it's going to be fun. So if you hear some random sounds or voices in the back, it's because I hit me a little soundboard deal. So well, that's enough of the chatting on our end. We need to let the man talk that everybody's tuned in to see. Dr. Todd Price is one of the most genius minds, in my opinion, when it comes to animal health and biosecurity specifically. So we really enjoyed having him on and want to thank him again for taking time out of his extremely busy season as it comes into the show season. So you guys are in for an absolute treat. I'll shut up and we'll let you get to it. Here is Dr. Todd Price. Well, hey guys, we have Dr. Todd Price with us here. I'm actually drove an hour north of the Kevin Wendt farm. Last couple days there, I'm getting ready to move, Corey. So just a quick little jog up north. We are at Lincoln Way Animal Hospital with Dr. Todd Price. And you guys saw earlier in the week where I posted a video if you guys had any questions, and we got a couple to talk with. So, Todd, thanks for having us here at the place, and thanks for joining the show.
Sure. Glad to do it, Trevor.
Yeah. So, hey, we just real quick wanted to tell us about a little bit about yourself and the practice and maybe, you know, how you got interested in the veterinary practice.
So we'll start with the veterinary end of things, but since junior high, I decided I want to be a veterinarian. I grew up on a farm, loved animals, loved livestock, and went to Ohio State, got out of there in 92. So I've been practicing ever since. Worked up in Northwest Ohio for a few years and then came home and started my own business. And we've grown now to four veterinarians with three locations. The location you're in today in Upper Sandusky is the hauling facility for most of the show pig people.
Oh, yeah. Been here a couple times.
A few times. And then we have a small animal clinic in Bucyrus, Ohio, and Sycamore. Four doctors total. Looking for a fifth one. So we can.
There's the plug.
We can use some help.
Anybody with a DVM, get over there.
There you go.
Yeah. So do you guys have like a specific vet for every species, or how does that work here?
So how I set it up is I wanted our clinic to be able to do mixed animal medicine. So we're all mixed animal doctors, but we all kind of have our own little niche.
Okay.
So we're all on call. We can handle horses. We can handle, each one of us can handle dogs and cats. But obviously, I do the swine work. Dr. Hartshue does the cattle work.
Okay.
Dr. Teresa Humphreys does most the equine work and then does a lot of small animal. And then Dr. Mallory Kaler is our most recent addition. She's been with us a couple years now.
Okay.
She does small animal and a lot of small ruminant.
Gotcha.
But any one of those can pop in and do a C-section or anything else.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a unique system that we have. And we're finding because of that, we're spreading our area, our radius of practice, so to speak.
Right.
We want to be very good at what we're at. And yet at the same time, if you're all by yourself, there's nobody to bounce ideas off of.
Yeah.
There's nobody to take on call.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have to refer any more ERs than we have to.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we use Ohio State or MedVet at times, but certainly we want to take care of our clients the best we can. So
absolutely.
That's kind of the design of the practice.
Yeah. So it's not like, well, there's a pig person. It's all you, Todd.
Yeah.
you each can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So then the show pig thing kind of got started. You know, I've been doing commercial swine work for years and for the past 20 years. And about 14, 15 years ago, my kids started showing and I was making them take commercial pigs to the county fair. And they weren't real happy about that. So we decided to get started and I made a trip to Texas, had a couple clients down there and brought a gilt back and that kind of took
off. Oh, yeah.
And they're currently, the kids have about 55 crossbred sows.
Wow.
A couple of purebred Yorks. Are kind of getting into it. They're starting to push a little bit. So it's kind of fun watching.
Yeah.
I love to use it as a learning tool. So, when they wanted to get more sows, put a gestation area in, we just gave them an old dairy barn and said, here, have at it, start ripping stuff out, pouring concrete. And they put their own stuff in. And that, I think that's the learning part of 4-H that sometimes we've forgotten about.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Right.
No, I enjoy, I mean, you're the vet for us there at Kevin's place where I live. And he, Corey, he always has a story to tell, like, oh, today they put the gates in. You should have saw them down there. Or the concrete story was my favorite when they were trying to mix concrete by wheelbarrows and flipping them everywhere.
Oh, man.
I believe in learning by the lessons of hard knocks.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
The floors may not quite be flat. They may not have quite the right slope to them, but they're in.
That's right.
Beats a dirt floor sometimes. So, right. Dr. Price, can I call you Todd? Is that okay?
You sure right. can.
So, yep. Todd, you talked about you guys made a trip down to Texas there, got your first gilt. Who'd that come from? How was she bred? What was she that got you started?
Actually, that came from Frank Davis.
Okay.
Down Southwest Texas. Frank was a client that I had picked up. I was actually speaking at our national swine vet meeting in Dallas that year. And so I drove on down south. About 6 hours, 6.5 hours, and talked to Frank, and he ended up bringing a gilt up for me. She had actually worked her. Well, she was a blue butt, and she had worked her way out of. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but brought her in and got started, and then kind of the rest is history. You know,
cool.
kept going out and expanding. She had our first champion for us, so it was kind of a hit right off the start.
Oh.
And then just kept rolling from there.
Not everybody can say that. One timer. So to jump right into some pretty big topics here, you know, coming up is the World Pork Expo and now the exposition due to some of the topics we're going to talk about today. And to jump right into it, we wanted to get a vet on the show and explain more about the African swine fever. Really, I want you to just kind of explain from ground zero all the way up to what we need to know, what is it, you know, and so forth. Because as many know, the World Pork Expo trade show part of that is no longer this year with the scare of the African swine fever. Although the show pigs is still going on called the Exposition there in Des Moines, Iowa. So if you wouldn't mind, Dr. Price, just go ahead and tell us about what the African swine fever is and what kind of threats it has to the swine industry.
Sure. If you look at it, African swine fever has been out around actually since the late 1800s.
Oh, really?
It's been in most other countries. It's very, very, very common in South Africa.
Okay.
It was in Europe in the late 1950s, again in about 1960. And then they got it died down, got it kind of quieted down. And then in the early 90s, it kind of came back. And so it came back in Russia and that Eastern European area. And the big fear now is now it's gotten into China.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's rolling in China. So the last information we've seen would suggest that about 28% of the sow farm is gone.
Wow. China. My God.
And if I listen to a lot of veterinarians that travel over there, uh-huh. I actually serve on the National Pork Board's, science and research, committee. There's about 15 of us, and we have good discussions there twice a year. And obviously a lot of our financial backing is now going to researching African swine fever. But in talking to several people on that committee that had traveled over there, it's quite the mess. It's quite the mess. So a little bit worried if the information we're getting is accurate. I'm pretty sure it's probably worse than we think it is.
Okay.
And if you understand how their system works, there's a lot of backyard production in China.
Okay.
There's also the topography of the land allows for a lot of wild boars, a lot of wild pigs. And when this virus gets into that, it'll stay in that population a long time.
I gotcha.
And given the fact that we don't have vaccines available yet,
okay,
our company's working on those. There's not an effective vaccine yet. So basically it's a depop kind of thing, right? We quarantine the herd. The federal government of that country comes in typically and they depopulate the herd. The problem with that is if we have all these feral swine out here running around carrying it, that's an issue.
Yeah. So to back up, what exactly is it and how do they contract the disease?
The fever, the African swine fever, is caused by a DNA virus.
Okay.
Okay. Several different serotypes. The serotype that's in Asia now looks like it's a little slower moving than most, but that's still a very fast replicating virus.
Right. Okay.
So our biggest fear here is that we have enough other viruses in pigs that it somewhat mimics them. So it's kind of a hemorrhagic virus where it gets into the bloodstream, it affects all the organs, it affects the spleen, the liver. So what you'll see a lot of times, just a pig just doesn't want to eat, tips of the ears may be red. And then it might slowly succumb and die 5, 7, 10 days later. Hmm. So all that time it's shedding virus. It'll shed virus in all the mucus secretions, any of the tears, any of the oral saliva, feces, blood, all those areas.
Wow.
So our biggest fear is it's going to go undiagnosed for a while, right?
Gotcha.
Because it looks a lot like if you see a pig there just not feeling well with red ears, you know, we can think about strep suis or parasuis or erysipelas or a dozen other diseases that cause that.
Yeah.
So we don't think, you know, we don't think about that first. One of the things that, you know, we're really working on as veterinarians is, you know, how can we get a pig side test? So those veterinarians, once we get called out, we can get it done right away.
Right.
Okay? Right now, everything has to go pretty much to a federal lab to be tested. We're trying to get funding for state labs so we can get some tests done there. And we just need to pick up our response because obviously with the amount of pigs moving today in the commercial world, we have to be able to find it fast.
Right.
Because if we don't find it, it's going to be spread everywhere.
Right. Yeah.
Out of control. I mean, people kind of forget how big the commercial pig system is.
Mm-hmm.
But if, you know, you think about us killing 480,000 pigs a day across the country, there's 3,000 to 3,200 loads of fat hogs on the road every single day.
Wow. That's hard to think about.
And that doesn't even bring into the fact of the wean pigs we move and the feeder pigs we move.
Yeah.
And so you talk about shutting down commerce, it would be a huge deal, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we're working hard to try to keep it out, right?
Right.
Just like anytime we vaccinate a single herd or we vaccinate Kevin's herd when they come down there, right? We're trying to keep diseases out of there. And then once it gets in, what are we going to do? So we're attacking it from both angles.
Okay.
Trying to increase our port presence. The most people that are listening are probably up to date on a lot of things. They probably read about the million pounds of product that came into New Jersey in the port. Actually wasn't a million pounds of just pork because it was just pork product into the things, ramen noodles and a couple other things. And that was caught by the people at the port doing their job, along with the beagles they use to catch those kind of things. If you've ever seen that, it's entirely amazing to watch a beagle walk by a piece of luggage that has a half a square inch of meat in it, and they'll stop in their tracks and drop.
That's amazing.
It is amazing that they're trained that way.
I will tell you, I had a mold issue, and I had a mold issue in my basement one time, and we had this this inspector come, and he brought some sort of a schnauzer dog with him, and could detect immediately what kind, like we had different signals for what kind of mold it was, and all this other stuff. So yeah, pretty amazing stuff.
Whoa,
yeah, it's amazing. We were in the Miami port here a few years ago, and watching them use those beagles that have been trained. They're very passive. And so when they don't bark when they see it, they just sit down. So it doesn't cause excitement or anything else. They just sit down when they find something. So pretty cool.
That's
how we're trying to keep it out
of right.
the country, right? We just have to have due diligence.
Because there is no case in the United States.
There's no case in the United States. It's not been diagnosed here. We are trying to keep it out.
Yeah.
With 28% of our commercial hogs being exported today, we will lose those exports if we get one case. African swine fever.
Wow.
So, and that 28% reduction in product sales would lead to probably 8 cent fat hogs.
Wow.
So it would be a travesty.
So yep. Do you think like the reason we don't have it yet, knock on wood, is we don't have as feral hogs like they do overseas, or do you think our immune is up, or what's your thoughts on
that? Well, so we wouldn't have any immunity to it because we haven't seen it before.
That's true.
We don't have a vaccine. Yeah. We do have feral swine. Now, we don't have it like they have it in China.
Okay.
But you get to the more mountainous parts of Southern Ohio and West Virginia and North Carolina, Texas, our Texas clients are battling feral swine all the time.
Uh-huh.
So when we didn't have that before, so that's our fear. 25 years ago, 30 years ago, we wouldn't have that many feral pigs.
Right.
Now we do. That's part of our fear. We're basically keeping it out because of biosecurity, right?
Right.
You just look at the country as a big herd. We're using our biosecurity around the borders to keep it out.
Uh-huh.
And that takes a lot of due diligence.
Right.
So we're working on that extremely hard. And then the other thing we're doing is, just last week we had roundtable set up, National Pork Producers Council worked with different states, and we had roundtable set up where we had state veterinarian in the room with the federal USDA veterinarians. With Ohio Pork Council members, with producers, both small and large, and basically had a mock set up and said, okay, if this herd were break here, what would we do? And it kind of baffles people how much time and energy it would take. So if you think about it, if a herd broke, you'd have a 1 mile hot zone probably around it.
Right.
And you'd have a 3 mile buffer zone around it. And so when you have to start shutting roads down, limiting where people drive, those roads are county and state, right? So you have a huge, you have to reach out and talk to a lot of people in a hurry.
Oh, yeah.
And then the biggest thing we have in Ohio that's probably right now our biggest stumbling block is what we do, because our plan right now would be to depop that herd,
uh-huh.
which would be to euthanize those animals.
Right.
You know, it's bad enough. You have 10 sows or say our 50 sows.
Right.
But you walk into, I was in a couple of herds a day that had 2,400. Animals in them.
Mm-hmm.
You walk into those buildings and try to euthanize 2,400 animals. It's a job.
Oh my! And what do you do with them afterwards?
Well, and that's your thing. You know, in Ohio, we can't bury because the water table is so close to the surface.
Yeah,
and so we have to work with local landfills. We have to find trucking companies that can haul them. We have to make sure the trucks get disinfected. It's not going to be an easy task. So we're just starting to work on it. And the reason we're doing that is we want everybody in their area to think about. This is my wheelhouse, and this is what I have to do.
So,
right,
so
right?
Why couldn't you cremate?
So, you couldn't get that many done fast enough.
Okay.
Yeah. You just, I mean, you take an incinerator, you know, and okay, you can do a 500 pound animal in 15 minutes. But if you walk into a 2,400 sow herd, you just can't.
Might as well set the building on fire.
You just can't. It's different. It's different with pigs and with poultry during the influenza breaks, where with poultry, you can really effectively and humanely euthanize those animals by just gassing them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can actually compost them in their own building, right? You can push them to the middle. You can take the bedding and put it on top of them and compost them. Can't do that with pigs.
Right.
It's a little different ballgame. So we're trying to attack it from both ends. And I don't say that to scare people. I just want them to understand that it's not a game we're playing.
Right.
This is different than Seneca Valley virus. They heard all the veterinarians talk about Seneca Valley virus a few years ago. Or say PED virus that caused the severe scours. So this is a different ball game, right? Those we can live with. Those are not necessarily reportable. Okay. This one is. And this one would be devastating.
So what do we have to do is show pig producers to kind of
just keep biosecure. I guess we'll get into more of that later in the discussion, but you know, it's not in the United States yet, but what do we need to just know and moving forward, you know, what if this were to happen, or, you know, what do the show pig people need to know?
So, you know, I'll just give you some of our biosecurity rules we use on general, on most of our commercial herds, and we need to use on our small herds too. So we don't allow anybody in our sow herds if they've traveled overseas for 72 hours. Mm-hmm. We just don't. We watch our movement between herds, right? Because we talked earlier about this virus being deadly, although deadly, it might take 5 to 7 days. And so if somebody calls up and says, hey, you know, I got a pig that's not acting well, I don't want people to run scared. At the same time, have them call their veterinarian. Don't go over and try to help treat it and then come back and go into your herd.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Treat those herds separately. Just good biosecure protocols. You're going to go to a show, you're going to bring a guild home, she needs to go into isolation.
Yeah.
Right? That's why you should have an isolation facility. And Trevor, you know me for years. I beat that bandwagon. All I can do it, you know. We got to have those animals in their own specific area, because when they come back and they come from a show, if they pick something up, they're going to shed it for a while. Mm-hmm. Until they either succumb to it or they stop shedding it. That's what biosecurity, that's what an isolation facility is about.
Right.
We're just going to leave them separate. And certainly then we can rope test them for flu or PRRS or all the normal things.
Right.
But part of isolation is watching that pig for sick signs.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So we might go to a show and only be there 72 hours and be home. Well, it takes sometimes 96 to even longer to see clinical signs.
Right. Sure.
So that's where isolation comes in. And I push the 4-H people to understand that isolation does not have to be pretty. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our isolation in our facility is to the north of us a half a mile, and it's a couple of pens.
Yeah.
An old barn.
Yeah.
It does not need to be pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just needs to be effective. And when it's effective, in Ohio, it's north or northeast of your sow farm. And it's chored by somebody that's totally away from the farm. And we have very good luck using facilities that are people, there may be clients that buy pigs from us in the spring. And then in the fall, we ask them to isolate for us because they've already got everything they need.
Right.
They've got the mm-hmm. gating, they've got the water lines, they've got everything else. Right. So it works out well.
Yeah.
Yeah. The African swine fever is, you know, obviously been a topic of discussion now for months. So glad that we got to have your take on it, and maybe hopefully some folks that didn't know or needed to know more got to hear it. So we're going to do a segment, and this is going to be interesting coming from you, we're going to do a little bit of a spin on this segment that we call Social Smash. And Trevor has a song for it, and I don't know if you'll get a kick out of it or not, but we're going to play it, hopefully.
You are really dumb. You're so stupid and dumb. Do you even have a brain in your stupid head? I don't think that you do.
That's our theme song for all the dumb ones out there that we formulate a pet peeve around.
I didn't realize you could sing.
Dr. Price, we want to know what your biggest pet, and this could be funny, it doesn't matter, it could be serious or funny, whatever, but what is your biggest pet peeve related to animal health and things that you see in the industry that just drives you nuts? I guess isolation would be one of those things.
Well, you know, I just kind of, it's interesting coming from the commercial world to the show pig world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Try to bring a lot of that information over. And I've learned through the years that obviously everybody's not going to adopt those. But they are kind of good principles. I would tell you there's a couple that I have. In the commercial world, the pet peeve that I have is people pick up National Hog Farmer, and because Farmer Joe Blow does it in Missouri, they think they can do it.
Yeah.
And they happen to, you know, it might be feeding a certain product, or it might be injecting a vaccine, and that fixed all his problems or her problems. And by golly, I'm going to do it. And that's just all there is to it, right? No diagnostics, nothing else. And then we get called in to stomp the fires out. I would say in the show pig world, honestly, and I want to walk softly here, but Trevor knows me well enough to know that I usually don't hold my tongue back too much. So I will approach it like this. I tell people that I have an attorney because I didn't study law in college, and I have an accountant because I didn't study taxes or finances in college, right? We rely on those professionals to do that. And I really, really think the hog breeders need to breed hogs and stop trying to be veterinarians. plain simple.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I go to these farms and the breeders have to start it because the clients don't know.
Yeah.
Their contact is the breeder. And there are so few pig veterinarians out here across the country, especially veterinarians that do show pig work, right? You could count us on one hand.
Yeah.
And so the people don't know us or know we're not close to them. And so they'll reach out to their breeder. And it's okay for the breeder. The breeder has to know it's okay for them to say, hey, I'm not sure. Here's the number of a veterinarian you want to call. Right? Yeah, yeah. Doesn't yeah. be your local dog veterinarian, but here's the number of veterinarian you can call. Almost any one of us will try to help them the best we can.
Right.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But handing them drugs and telling them, well, we've had some pneumonia and this worked for me, so let's try that. We don't know if it's the same pneumonia. We don't know what's causing it. We don't know what else has happened on the farm. So handing out that quote unquote free advice, I just have a problem with. I go to the breeders if I want to know how to line up a certain sow line.
Right, right.
I'll go to breeders and say, hey, what do you think about this?
Yeah.
We'll have some friends over at once in a while and say, hey, look at these sows. What would you breed to? Right? We'll take your opinion. So I don't look at it as wrong for those breeders to say, hey, that health is not in my wheelhouse.
Right.
This is what we do, but you need to contact a professional.
Right.
Yeah. because I get kids, you know, the poor kids come out and they've got this and that and the other thing going on, and they believe in their breeders, and that's a good thing, but the breeders have to know their limits.
Yeah. And the breeders seem to believe in the vet.
Yes. Yes. There's a thought.
You know, most times I would think a lot of breeders are connected with a pretty good vet, or should be anyway. And, you know, the fact is, and what's funny, Todd, is we've talked about this multiple times, actually, in this exact topic of how on social media, there's these Facebook pages and just people posting pictures and be like, hey, what drug do I use for this? Or I got a pig coffin. Yeah. Should I give it penicillin or Dex, or what do I need to do? And they'll just, you know, there'll be just keyboard warriors just rattling off all these things and protocols that they do. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, you know, there's people that actually get paid that studied how to, you know, clinically look at an animal and tell you what's wrong with it. So,
yeah. And you know, the thing that I find, it's like all the buildings I was in today, I'm checking management in those buildings more than anything else.
Yeah.
Right. Because 9 times out of 100, the problems that happen in a pig happen because we did something to stress it. Uh-huh. We chilled it on the ride home. It got wet on the ride home. We didn't have the temperature quite right. May not have enough bedding into it. All those kind of things. We changed its water source. We did a bunch of other things to it that we just, as livestock producers, think we could just do it.
Right.
Well, we can't always be that quite cowboyish, right? Yeah. We got to kind of back up a little bit. So it typically is management. So when we get those calls and people say, hey, I've got this, then my first question is, well, I need to know what your facility is.
Right. Like. Yeah.
I need you to walk me through that. Because if I don't know that and I can't see that, I might be able to say, yeah, that's a pastoral pneumonia or that's a strep suis, and I can titrate it. Mm-hmm. But if I don't fix the underlying cause, you're going to call me again in a week.
Right.
You're going to get our pig stick from it. Right.
Yeah.
So the big picture is fix the issues in the environment. And then we prevent it, which is what our profession is supposed to be about prevention.
Yeah.
People look at us as, you know, maybe an expense because we're always coming in to treat things. And yet they should look at us as to try to help prevent health issues.
Well, I'm sure you love going out late at night, treating sick stuff all day, every day, you know?
Yes, it's awesome. I'm 51 years old and I just can't get enough of it.
Yeah. And people, you know, they think that they love to have you out too. So.
Yep.
Oh man. No, this is one that Corey and I were preparing for this conversation, and he's the one that kind of had this topic. So I'm going to steal it from you, Corey. Sorry, buddy. But
This is
one of the things that I always thought of, though. You're on the road all the time. You said you went to many finishers just today. What are some of the wild, crazy calls that you've been on, or maybe some memorable things that you've seen without, you know, you can't really name drop, but what are some of the things that you've encountered as your time as being a veterinarian?
So one of the wildest, craziest cases I ever had actually was small animal. I was only out of school a couple of years, and I got a call one night, and the gentleman said that he wanted to bring his dog in because he had a false eye. He had taken his eye out to lay down and take a nap, And he got up and his eye was missing and he thought his dog had eaten it. So we got to do intestinal surgery and take an eyeball out of a dog.
No way.
Yeah. And I wasn't sure why, because I was pretty sure he wouldn't put it back in his eye socket anyhow. But we did it. We did it. So it was kind of cool.
Oh my God.
Probably the weirdest large animal kind of thing was, or the most interesting thing, different for me, was a few years ago, just doing county fair work. And a gentleman called me from Missouri. He was on his way up to a local county fair here that we service. And he had a tiger that was sick.
Tiger.
St. Louis Zoo vet had worked on him, and I contacted that veterinarian. And so we had about 12 hours to prepare before he got here. So we kind of got some background on what was going on.
Huh.
But I had never put an IV catheter in a tiger before. And I've been in practice now 26 years. I'd probably been out about 22 years by then. That one made you shake a little bit.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Through those bars. Yeah, so the guy assured me that he was really good. He was really good, but he was also very large and a very big paw.
Yeah, it's so, a tiger, yeah, for Christ's
yeah,
sake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I wasn't going to mess with him. It was kind of interesting to do that. We got him kind of brought back around and got him going again. Unfortunately, I called the owner when he got back to Florida, which was his home base, he had lost him. And they did some necropsy work and found out that he had actually gotten tainted meat.
Oh.
Meat from an animal that had been euthanized, which is not supposed to get in the food. Obviously, it wouldn't get to us, but it's not supposed to even get into dog food or
right.
lion tiger food. But he'd obviously purchased some. And
oh, my.
Yeah.
I thought we were about to get down a Mike Tyson rabbit hole for a second.
How do you prepare for that, though? I mean, there's not like a book on how to fix tigers. Like, do you just call the local zoo? Or?
Yeah, you know, it's just resources. So I knew the lady that was doing the work at Columbus Zoo. And I talked to the veterinarian that was doing the work at St. Louis. And just kind of started putting things together. And they kind of reassured me that, hey, it's just a big cat.
I'll be damned.
It's a big cat, all right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No kidding. That's cool. Well, I was going to ask you what the most exotic animal you worked on, but if you could top tiger, good luck.
No, that's my top one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. All right. Well, that's pretty, I can't believe, I couldn't imagine trying to find an eyeball in a dog's stomach. Okay. So, all right, we're going to go on to another segment. While we're talking about it, and in this segment we call Topics from a Hat, and luckily we've got a sponsor now for this segment, Topics from a Hat. So
breaking news
brought to you by Fierce Threads, Topics from a Hat. The only hat and apparel that we will use is going to come from the good folks at Fierce Threads. So Fierce Threads is your number one source for high quality screen printing and embroidery. Put your business success at the forefront and upgrade your apparel today with Fierce Threads. So thankful for our folks there. So our topic from a hat comes from an anonymous listener. Once we kind of figured out that we were going to be talking to you, we thought this would be a good one to pull out. So they say it's unfair to have zero tolerance drug testing. Even using skin cream to keep an animal comfortable will get you kicked out. They understand that animals should not be given illegal substances or performance enhancing drugs, but zero tolerance, they think, is not the answer. And you can tiptoe around this, or we can just drive straight through it and you can give your opinion. I'm sure my folks in Illinois would love to hear it.
So I'll drive right through it. Okay.
All right.
So I understand where they're coming from, but the one thing we forget sometimes in the 4-H projects is we're producing a meat animal. Right. And so we have to use drugs that are approved for animals that animal is going to go to market. We cannot use products that have not been approved. The downside to that is, in the show pig world, how many products are approved for, quote, show pigs, right? They're not.
Right.
They're approved for pigs.
Yeah.
Right? So we're not putting sunscreen on our pigs and finishers, right? Because yeah. We don't have to worry about
Good
it.
Good point.
So it's a little bit different. And what I would urge those folks to do is I'd urge them to talk and work with their county fair vet or their fair veterinarian, whatever, their state state fair or the national show, work with the veterinarian to find out what you should be able to use, or maybe there are some natural things we can do to try to help that animal. Zero tolerance. You know, we're getting into more of an age of organic production and antibiotic free and all those things. And we really can't cross this border of starting to, again, cowboy and kind of do our own little
right.
thing, right? We've got to back away from that. And that's why I kind of get on that mantra sometimes about, you know, beating that drum about not using drugs that are not approved, not using drugs from other breeders. We had a case one time that I got called by the Ohio Department of Ag because we had somebody had a bottle with our name on it that was Bantamy, and they had mm-hmm. used it. Was not my client.
Huh.
He picked it up at a farm that was my client.
Uh-huh.
So when all that got passed through, I had a nice long discussion with my client and let them know that that bottle was not to leave that farm.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. We don't, what's going to happen if we mess with that, we're going to not get to where we can leave products. You're right. We're going to have to leave a dose for a animal.
Right.
And that's going to be it. And we don't want that.
Right.
So we just need to be thoughtful about that. And we're not going to change the FDA's ruling on stuff. We just kind of have to abide by it.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I've thought about this topic right. when I saw it come across, and I'm like you, Tubb. I see where they're coming from. We're in an animal protein business. That's what it's supposed to be about. But, you know, there's some show aspects behind it, too. But, you know, you're just trying to, as an honest show pig producer or whatever, you're trying to make that pig comfortable. So if you put some rash, you had some rash cream in your show box and you put it on there and you're like, oh, crap. You know, then you're kind of stuck. So I guess here's a question that's popped in my head is if you do that all of a sudden and, you know, you got some cream and you rubbed it on there and you're like, oh, crap, I'm in Illinois and they're going to kick me out for this. What's the proper thing to do after that?
So the first thing to do is take the cream or whatever you put on the animal. And again, find the fair veterinarian in charge.
Yeah.
Because I can't say all skin creams are the same.
Right. Yes.
But if we look at the list of ingredients and most of those are natural, we can say, hey, you know, you should be able to wash that off, or you should be able to wait so many days and you'll be fine.
Okay.
Okay. I got you. Mm-hmm. So there's ways that we can work with it. But I can't just tell you all creams are the same.
True.
Because if a cream has nitrofurazone in it, that's absolutely taboo in livestock. Okay. But if another cream is like aloe vera or something, then it's a lot more so-called natural.
We
can use those products. So.
So I'd be curious to get your thoughts. Cause I know a lot of people, that I talk to, you know, about this kind of thing, they have a bigger problem, I guess, with, you know, if you got one that comes up limping before a show, or you got one that's maybe got a puffy hock or something like that, and given an extra dose of Bantamine to help, you know, kind of reduce those things and, you know, obviously anti-inflammatory. We all know what Bantamine can do, but, you know, that's kind of their big thing is you can't even give a shot of Bantamine to a bear that's maybe got a little limp or maybe he's feeling a little swollen one day here and there. And so, you know, that's the biggest complaint that I hear comes from that side of things. So I'd be interested to hear your standpoint on that. And, you know, obviously if you give one a shot, you know, the day of the show or 2 days before, you can't exhibit that animal. Otherwise you'll be kicked out if you went. So.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's not just the meat hold, right? So, it's also the 72-hour rule that we don't want to give anti-inflammatories. Anything that will affect the gait or ambulation of that animal in the arena, we don't want to give within 72 hours of the show. But obviously, Bantamine can be given 4 or 5 days before the show.
Right.
We just have to watch the withhold on it, right? And we're mm-hmm. talking different if we're talking carcass pigs or market terminal shows versus a breeding guild or a boar show.
Sure.
Okay. Totally different. So,
right.
And I agree with you. What I would tell you is, and we urge our clients to do, there's a lot of other therapies that are out here now that we can do. So I'll make Trevor laugh, but you know, one of my favorite therapies is a laser that we use.
Oh yeah.
A cold laser. I mean, we can really, it's not a magic bullet, but we can really do a lot of anti-inflammatory care and a lot of pain relief care with just a laser. That works very well, totally external. And then we use a lot of cold water therapy. If you think about it, if we have, if we have athletes that hurt themselves or sprain an ankle or do something like that, what do? They do heat and cold.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of physical therapists will do heat and cold. So the laser will put heat into it. We'll allow that to work for a couple of days, and then we'll start cold water soaking. And I'll have people put a little pressure on the end of that hose and then hit that joint very hard with that cold water to kind of drive that cold in.
Yeah.
And that works extremely well.
Huh.
So that, you know, those are all those natural things. You've got to think outside the box.
Right.
I get the point about not being able to get Banamine or not being able to do, you know, if Meloxicam ever gets approved for pigs, that's a great pain reliever. That gets approved. That'll be kind of a slam dunk, but there'll be a hold on it.
Right. Sure.
So
I guess we're so quick to resort to the needle.
Exactly. You know? And that was a point I was going to, Trevor, was we have to stop and think and back up. It's the answer is not always in a bottle,
right?
Not always in a bottle. So,
yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. The quick, you know, I call it the 24-hour fix, you know, something that you could do fast that you see an instant reaction on, you know, it's just kind of an unfortunate situation. If you have one that comes off a trailer, you know, a day or two before they're going to show and, you know, they slip and, you know, injure themselves or whatever, you're kind of, that's the name of the game, I guess. You're kind of SOL, I would think, you know, as far as these policies go. But, you know, I've kind of been following a little bit. Actually, a gal that Trevor and I graduated Blackhawk with has started her own business called Livestock Renew, and she uses that MagnaWave therapy. And I thought that, you know, I've seen her have quite a bit of success with that kind of, you know, put them on backs and hocks and hind legs, you know, reduce swelling and help those animals become a little bit more flexible.
It's kind of voodoo at first. If you think about it, like, oh, you're going to lay this thing over its back and it's going to help. But then you see the videos that they post and the muscles jumping and quivering. It's like, oh, something's
that
working.
That stuff is becoming more, more on the forefront.
Yeah.
If you will. We've had our K laser for probably 9 or 10 years now. We've actually got two of them now, one in the office, one in my truck. But it's the same source, right? It's a different source of anti-inflammatory. It's the same as the magnetic,
right?
Magnetic therapy. It's we have to look at those other ways that are another way of healing besides again, sticking a needle in a pig.
Exactly.
Huh. Right. I also have a theory on how to keep livestock sound going to a show. And has to buy them that way.
I didn't know where that was going, Corey.
Yeah, I tell my kids and my clients, there's usually nothing but bad that can happen within 96 hours of a show day. So just try to keep things afloat and keep rolling. Exactly.
So what's the one piece of advice you would give to every level of expertise when it comes to the show livestock industry?
You know, I think there might be one or two. I mean, everybody just needs to just kind of take a breath once in a while.
Yeah.
Right. We get a little nervous. We get a little crazy. And remember, I would urge the parents to remember why we're there. And I talked about this. We just kicked off our summer show circuit in Ohio this year, just last Saturday up at Wood County. Beautiful new facility. 350 some animals in there. And I spent about 5 minutes talking to them and urging the parents to understand that, remember, this goes back to 4-H and about teaching kids, right? And we're all competitive. I'm competitive. Mm-hmm. I've been competitive all my life, and I really think the show pig industry is a combination of us old folks that can't go out and play football anymore and can't be real competitive in things. And it's kind of a combination of that and gambling, right?
Because we
gamble on every bread style we buy. We gamble on every pig we buy.
That's the truth.
So it's a good deal, but we have to remember that there's a reasonable level to things.
Uh-huh.
And I think 99.9% of exhibitors are very good, right? They're a very good set of people, very good individuals, care about their livestock. And then once in a while, we just get one or two that just go over the edge.
Yeah.
And we just got to kind of pull them back in.
Yeah.
And tell them to take a chill pill. and then everything's okay. So I think just remember it's the big picture.
That reminds me, Corey, back we interviewed Miles Tinius.
Settle the bleep down.
Yeah. We each had if you had a magical supplement, what would you make? And his was, well, I would get a can of bottle and give it to every parent of chill the F out.
That's actually very good. Very good.
What do you got in your toolbox? We can make some of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be very good. Cause then honestly, the children really aren't the issue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The little exhibitors and stuff, they're just cool. They want to have a good time and they want to win. Right.
Right. Right.
But mom and dad just need to go take a break.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So just got to kind of back off a little bit.
That's right.
Yeah.
So we had a couple of people, after I posted that video the other day, Corey, they did send in some topics that they wanted to discuss with Dr. Yeah. Price.
Okay. So our buddy Cole on Instagram, he asked, you know, what's the best way? Because, I mean, we're getting ready. As you said, you know, Ohio's already started. Indiana started that last weekend too. And, you know, this is big prime jackpot season. So what's the best way to keep your animals healthy during a jackpot season?
So I would tell you to start out with a very well vaccinated animal. Think about the things that are going to be spread at those jackpot shows. It's going to be primarily viral infections,
mm-hmm.
Influenza, PRRS, those kind of things. So I would urge the exhibitors to have those pigs vaccinated ahead of time. And remember that it's basically a balancing scale, vaccine versus disease, immunity mm-hmm. versus disease, right? Mm-hmm. The best vaccines are 90% effective, right? So if we go out and we vaccinate 1,000 pigs in a finisher, 900 of them will develop immunity to whatever we vaccinate.
Right.
From, but 100 of them still don't.
Right.
That's why we typically give two doses of a product.
Yeah.
Because now 90% of those 100 will get immunity. Now we're left with 10 in the barn that don't have immunity, but 990 do. There's a reason for that, right? So bringing that epidemiology thought of commercial pig production into the show world, A, it's vaccinate. It's vaccinate with an approved product that has been known to do a good job. Okay, we don't vaccinate with things we mix up in a bathtub. Okay, we don't do that. We can only legally vaccinate with things and mix things that are labeled to be mixed.
Uh-huh.
Okay, as veterinarians, it's actually illegal for us to mix things that we can't. Now the end producer can mix anything they want to mix on their end because they are in the end of the end game, they're responsible for it.
Right.
So they can mix whatever they want to mix. Right. But as veterinarians, we're not supposed to do that.
Right.
Doesn't mean some don't, we're just not supposed to.
Right.
And I would say again, back to the biosecurity, right? So we have pigs vaccinated and you want it to work. You hope it has a good immune response in that pig. But remember the vaccines can only work once the virus gets into the pig.
Mm-hmm.
And so you still have actual infection into the nasal passage, into the lungs, and you hope the vaccine shuts that disease down rather quickly. That's the idea of the vaccine. It won't, it's not a bubble mm-hmm. wrapped around that pig, right? So you still want to go through, if you have two herds at home, you have your county and your state fair pigs, and then you have your jackpot pigs. Those jackpot pigs should be in a different area.
Gotcha.
They just should be.
Well, I actually got a text message from another person on the way up here. So it didn't make the outline, but it should be. This is one I think you should be just skim over pretty good. But I got a text from a very good friend of mine. I didn't get permission to say her name on here, so I won't do it. But she's got a really good set of lambs, but she's going through a terrible cough in the barn and says that Sulfa, New Floor, Draxxin, she's tried it all and there's still nothing that's working. I mean, again, you got to go through the environment they're in and all that. But is there anything that pops out of your mind that you may suggest or try for even her or some other producers that are having the same problem?
So the first thing that's a little bit different is she's given a lot of antibiotics,
mm-hmm. right?
And a lot of those are very good antibiotics. So I start sitting back thinking, what else is out here that can cause a cough that's not bacterial?
Right.
Right. So there are viruses in sheep that cause it. It's also been I don't know where she's from, but it's been a very wet spring so far, very wet, cold spring. We have diagnosed more parasite issues this spring than any year I can remember the last 25. Unbelievable the amount of parasite issues. Remember that lungworms migrate through the lung, uh-huh. i.e. their name. Okay. So we could be dealing with a parasite issue there. So I would start with basic diagnostics, right? Some of the things we don't do in the livestock world is and I tell my clients, my stethoscope is not a magic wand.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't
dang it.
hold it on a lamb or hold it on a cow and say, oh, this is what it is.
Yeah.
But it's just a guiding post, right? But I would do some fecal floats. I'd make sure see where we're at on those fecals. Make sure we don't have a parasite issue there first. And then again, work with our veterinarian to figure out what's going on.
Right.
They can do a few things there. Listening to an animal will tell you a fair amount, right?
Right.
Taking a temperature on an animal tells me a fair amount. So if a small ruminant or a cow is, or a calf is 105 or above, I tend to lump it into the viral claim, right? Because viruses give a lot higher fever than right. bacteria. If I'm looking at a calf or a lamb that's 102, 103, maybe 103 and a half, I'm thinking more bacterial.
Uh-huh.
Simple things like if I hear more fluid on the right side of the lung versus the left side, that means I'm a little earlier into the disease, because if you know the anatomy, the right bronchi in most mammals breaks off before the left bronchi.
Huh.
Bacteria are heavy, so they fall to the right side. So if I pick up a little bit of fluid on the right side listening and I don't pick it up on the left side, I'm pretty sure I'm dealing with a bacterial pneumonia, and I'm pretty sure I'm fairly early on with it.
Huh.
If I hear it on both sides, it's been a while, right? It's been a few days. It's getting ahead of me. I need to get a little more reactive to it, right? So all those things are kind of things right. you use, but it's still not a magic wand.
Yeah. Right.
Still can't tell you all the answers.
Right.
So I would start with some diagnostics, and then I would start, you know, they can do some tracheal swabs. They can do just anything. But I would start with a fecal and have a veterinarian take a look at those lambs and see what they come up with. That'd be where I'd start, though.
Yeah, for you sure.
Know, sheep will find a reason to die for any reason, though, too. So,
my favorite one about the sheep, if you put them in a circle pen, they'll find a corner to die in.
Yeah, that's right.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true.
So, all right. We're on the show stock, side of things here, but I'm interested to know if you've seen a difference in your experience with immune responses in show stock versus commercial and seed stock, if it's much different, or, you know, obviously the overall genetics of, you know, aren't too terribly different. You know, they're still the same species and all that, but is there a big difference in how you treat them?
Not at all. I mean, really it's the same animal, right? We've just genetically bred them for more muscle and more bone and those kind of things. But if you look at a commercial pig, you look at a show pig, it's exactly the same immune system, mm-hmm. right? They have a mucosal immune system in their nasal passage in their mouth. They have circulating antibodies. They have all the same cells, the B cells, the T cells, all those things are the same. The difference, I think, comes in when we talk about size of herd. Okay. So that's where it's different. So we know from an epidemiology standpoint and studying herd sizes and numbers, if we get a sow herd much over about 400 sows, viruses are a lot harder to get out of that herd.
I see.
Okay. So if someone says, well, I know Joe Blow down the street and he got PERS in his herd, he couldn't get it out. Well, Joe might have 1,200 sows, right? So right. it's a little harder to get out mm-hmm. of there than a herd with 40 or 50, because we're below that threshold of 400 to 500.
Right.
It also depends if we have three-site production versus two-site production, right? Have a lot of vaccine programs out there, and people say, well, why are you vaccinating for rhinitis and erysipelas and pastoral pneumonia? When I read National Hog Farmer, and nobody out here vaccinates for it. Well, National Hog Farmer is basically a commercial production magazine.
Uh-huh.
And commercially, we do not vaccinate for that anymore. We haven't for years because we use a process called three-site production. Pigs come off the sows at 24 days. They go to a different site. They're there for 6 weeks. They go from there to a different site. It's called all-in, all-out production.
Uh-huh.
And on the show pig thing, it's like I raised him in the 70s. We got the boar and the sows on the same side as we have the nursery and the finisher.
Right.
So all the bugs are concentrated. So it's a better system because it's a smaller number system, but it's a worse system because it's basically what we classify as a one site production. All ages are on one site. So it's hard to get rid of the bacteria mm-hmm. and the bugs a little bit because old mama sow out there, she's still shedding it. Right.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of things we have to understand is difference. I would say the one thing we see, though, in our pure lines, we have a few purebred York herds that are very reactive, reactive to iron injections, reactive just about anything we give them.
Hmm.
That would be the only thing we see difference because mainly the commercial world is filled with line breeds.
Yeah.
There's not really Yorks and large whites anymore. There's genetic companies have taken lines and just lined those breeds in it and right. lined those up. So it's a little different ball game. But
so is there mm-hmm. such thing as like area vaccinations? Like this area is specifically for this vaccination and this area I've, you know, as a vet, I would specifically amp this vaccination up? Is that such a thing?
So it is for things like swine influenza.
Okay.
We actually watch our isolates as we're coming across, getting isolates across the Midwest. And we work with University of Minnesota and a couple of researchers up there who I think are just top notch in flu. They're world renowned for their influenza virus research. And they will tell us what they see end in Illinois in the spring will hit Indiana and Ohio in the fall.
Hmm.
It moves that way. And so we can regionalize our flu vaccines, right? Because we know what's coming.
Right.
PERS is maybe a nickel different in the fact that it can vary a little more across the country. But I would tell you everybody that's out there now is familiar with the 1.7.4 strain that's kind of been circling last year or two. So there are some things you can regionalize vaccinate for, some things you can't.
Right.
And I would tell you flu is certainly one of those.
Oh yeah.
This is the same reason the CDC changes the flu isolates in humans every year.
Yeah.
Right. Because if you got last year's vaccine, it's not going to work this year.
Yeah.
Cause it changes all.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Same thing.
All right, Corey.
Wow. I really like the beat. I got some shit up on my chest. I think it's time I preach. It's time I preach.
Whoa, that jam gets me pumped up for some reason. All right, so Todd, this is our power washing proverb segment, and it's my turn this week. So I kind of come up with something that, you know, just gets me fired up every time I think about it, whether I'm driving down the road or laying in bed or, you know, talking to other people in our industry. And so I've kind of written just a little something here, and I'm going to call it an ode to the hungry. So this is to the big idea people, the observers, the risk takers, the folks that want it so bad they can't sleep, to the hustlers, the movers and shakers, to the ones who are working to become the best and the ones that aren't satisfied with being the best, the seasoned industry leaders and the next men and women up, to the young person trying to find their passion, and the veterans that are given the advice, the ones that hate losing and love competition, to the ones with wit, grit, and never quit, stay hungry. That's my power washing proverb.
Whoa. You sent me that in preparation for this, Corey, while I was cleaning pens. And I got a notification, and I was like, I just sat there and read it, and I was like, okay, that's what we're talking about. So, hey, I put a star by that one. I'll use that one again one day.
That just gets me pumped, man. Whenever I think about just where our industry's going, where it's been, and the people that have just taken the time just to, you know, they never get tired of it, you know.
Right.
You know, Dr. Price is kind of perfect. You know, you've been in practice for, you know, 26 years or so, and you know that to keep getting after it every day and to doing something that you love, and you know you can't slow down, you got to keep, you know, staying hungry. And so I just kind of I love seeing that in other people, and it gets me fired up to do the same thing. And so
there you have it. All right, well, I'm gonna ask the last question this time, because it's a fun one, but everybody answers different. So you can go whichever direction you want to go, and everybody that's listening knows what's coming. But the last question we usually ask our guests is, where do you see the show stock industry in about 5 years?
You know, it's going to keep expanding. I'm amazed at what it's done the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to keep expanding. It's going to keep getting bigger and bigger. It's going to keep involving more people. That's going to be up to the youth that are coming out. Young guys your age,
yeah.
Young guys the age of my kids. It's going to be interesting to see, but I will tell you that I think it's going to be much larger than it is now and continue to grow. I'm totally amazed every year at the number of people getting their kids involved in livestock production, uh-huh. Whether it's show cattle or show lambs or show pigs. I think it's going to keep growing. I don't think there's any question about that. The amount of people making a living off the show industry is doubling,
mm-hmm.
almost every other year,
yeah.
You know, with everything they can bring to the market and what they do. I certainly hope that we continue down this path of making things a little more traditionally honest mm-hmm. right? With some of the stuff that's shaped the pig industry in the last 6 months,
right?
We want to be able to know that we get up in the morning and what we're doing is for the right reason,
right?
It's not all about the dollar, and a lot of times I think people are chasing the dollar, mm-hmm. and that little kid doesn't care about the dollar.
Yeah,
kid cares about learning.
Yep.
And that's, if you look at a lot of things where kids are involved with the livestock, those kids grow up being so much more mature, mm-hmm. so much more responsible. So I hope it continues to grow. Our job as veterinarians to me is protecting the health on things. Mm-hmm. Y'all can take it where you want to take it. Our job is to protect the health on it. We certainly don't want shows to get shut down because of health.
Right.
Right.
Sure. No, that's, I love that question. And when we ask it, cause everybody, I think that Corey, I think you would agree too, that, you know, everybody said it's going to get bigger and it's going somewhere.
Yeah.
If somebody's not playing basketball and baseball all year round, they're also showing pigs. You know, mm-hmm. if they're not doing just that, yeah. they're also doing show cattle, you know, whatever exactly. it may be. So, exactly. I'm excited for it. I really am. And all of our listeners kind of know that moving forward, that I think it's going to be a really,
yeah, it seems to be the theme for sure.
Well, Todd, that is the conclusion of our questions for you. It's been an absolute pleasure, and you're always one I go to for, rather it be a picture I send to you, what is this, and you answer it for me, or just to hear everything you got to say and the positive outlook you got on the industry. And can't thank you enough for letting us take another hour out of your busy Monday already. And so I appreciate that, and thanks for tuning in.
I appreciate you having me, and I appreciate you guys doing this. It brings more information to the people.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear what people got to say about this.
Yeah, this is good, and I hope this leads to more future conversations with, you know, folks maybe that are a little bit more focused in show cattle. Hey, maybe Dr. Price might be able to hook us up, Trevor, with some more people to interview on other species. That'd be kind
of
cool.
There you go. I'm always open for that.
Yeah, give us a contact to your tiger vet there at the zoo. Yeah. That'd be good. No, thanks again. And you know, for all of our listeners out there, we've loved the interaction we've had with you guys so far. And Trevor said it there at the opening, t-shirt contest was a huge success, and we're going to, you know, showcase our winner this evening. So, again, if you guys have any ideas for future episodes, things that you want us to talk about, things you want to know more about, don't hesitate to reach out to us, get a hold of us on all of our social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat, just continue to like and share and follow along and have fun with us. Like I always say, without you guys listen, we are nothing. So again, I just appreciate all you guys for what you do.
Absolutely. And guys, like Corey just said, tonight we will showcase the winner of our t-shirt design contest. And also, to those of you going to World Pork Expo, and if you don't plan on going to World Pork Expo, maybe you should, because that's where we'll be. We're going to have a ton of fun. We may this week sometime, Corey, we may open up a few things that we're going to have there at the World Pork Expo. Exciting stuff ahead. So this has been an absolute blast. And again, thank you for tuning in to another edition of Stock Talk. I gotta go.